Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. My name's Dave, and I'll be your host today. We're starting off with a look at an upcoming network reality TV show that's planning to help single people find suitable partners. Not at some tropical island resort or Hollywood studio backlot, but in the fields and pastures of British Columbia.
Even though it is we're casting for farmers in British Columbia, it really will be a series that will reflect Canadians from across the country.
Also, we hear a lot about how certain farming practices can support carbon sequestration in the soil, but an Alberta organization is digging deep with farmers and ranchers to sort out just how much is being stored and just how much their practices are putting away.
Yes, there's a lot of carbon down there. There's carbon that could be potentially lost, and there's also potential to sequester more at depth, which would make it more stable in the future and more of a climate solution.
And Laura Rance, our VP content for Glacier Farm Media, is considering the effects of the war in Ukraine and the choices that farmers and the rest of the world have to soon make, including choices about what not to do.
The path to increase production elsewhere to make up for what's being lost is fraught with complications.
All that's coming up on Between the Rows, right after a few words from this week's sponsor.
AGI Weststeel manufactures the highest quality galvanized grain bins on the market. With over a century of experience, our quality designs and storage options deliver the right solution to suit your needs. Visit aggrowth.com/Weststeel for more information. That's aggrowth.com/Weststeel.
C'est le moment de vous inscrire pour trouver l'amour dans le pré.
Moi, rendu à 25 ans, je cherche une compagne de vie. Avoir notre petit chez nous, puis vivre heureux, trouver la bonne.
That's from the opening of L'Amour est dans le pré, the reality TV show which helps connect single farmers in Quebec and Eastern Ontario with potential partners. During its run so far, the show reports to have connected at least 15 couples and led to the development of 27 farm kids. The show's already got a call out for farmers to take part in its 11th season on Bell Media's Nouveau Network. This spring, however, Bell Media is taking that franchise way out west to British Columbia in the form of a new English language series to be called Farming for Love. On the line, we have co-executive producers Aaron Haskett and Gene Parsons from Lark Productions in Vancouver, who are developing the new show for CTV and have a deadline for applications from interested farmers coming up pretty quick. Aaron, Gene, hi, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Nice to be here.
Great to have you here. Now, as with most of the concepts for the reality shows we all know, this one started in Britain years and years ago with a show called The Farmer Wants a Wife. A few years back, I had Martin Métivier from L'Amour est dans le Pré on this show, and I've got to admit, I did wonder at the time why nobody had picked up on that concept yet for the ROC, you know, the rest of Canada market. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I do know that a lot of people have been talking about this format in English Canada and many parts of the world for some time now, and I think it just is all about timing. I know Bell and CTV are really excited, as are the whole team at Lark, to be a part of the English Canada version. And even though it is we're casting for farmers in British Columbia, it really will be a series that will reflect Canadians from across the country.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, in the meantime, of course, there's also, you know, the also complicating matters. There's been the pandemic in terms of socializing as we know it. But in your favor for a series like this, you know, the data has also shown that it seems to have driven somewhat of a shift in where people in Canada want to live. Do you think that might be helpful at all?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think a lot of us are thinking about our urban lives here in the city and daydreaming about a simpler life out in the country. And, you know, this show definitely aims to celebrate that lifestyle. You know, no farmers, no food. We're going to take place on some very beautiful, stunning BC landscapes. So, yeah, absolutely. I definitely think that's a draw to the show.
Mm-hmm. Now, your deadline for applications is coming up April 15th. What can you tell us about what you're looking for in potential applicants?
For sure. So as Aaron mentioned, you know, this is going to be filmed in BC for the first go around. So we are looking for BC-based farmers. Now, the daters at a later phase will come from across the country so that we get representation from, you know, across Canada. But we are looking for BC farmers that really, I think, modernize the image of the farmer in the minds of Canadians. We'd love to show all different kinds of diversity, you know, ages, backgrounds, genders, and really also unexpected kinds of farms as well. We're interested to, you know, meet beekeepers, artisanal cheese producers, folks who work at wineries, flower farmers, and, you know, of course, intend and hope to have more traditional farmers as well, like cattle ranchers and wheat growers. But we're really looking to celebrate all different kinds of diversity that BC has to offer in the agricultural community.
Now, will you be going up to the Peace region way up north as well, or are you mostly sticking kind of to southern BC in the interior?
We're looking all across BC right now.
Okay. Now, you know, once you've got your applicants together, though, I mean, you've still got to put together a good TV show. So what do you think in general terms you'll be looking for in your final five?
I think something that's really important with this series is authenticity. You know, when you look at the format as produced in other territories, and it has been made in 32 countries around the world, globally, it's accounted for 191 marriages, 444 babies. You know, it really works. It does build lasting love connections. And I think that comes down to the authenticity. So one thing that's really important for us is that the farmers are single. They're genuinely looking for love. They're ready to settle down. You know, someone who is at the right place and time in their life that they want to get married. They want to find their forever person.
Now, the search for potential partners for your chosen five farmers, does that only begins, I'm assuming, once you've picked your five?
That's correct. Yes, that's correct. We will be first casting our farmers, getting to know them, what they're looking for, and then we'll begin the dater casting process to find the right candidates for them. And actually the farmers will be involved in choosing which daters end up on their farms.
Okay. And again, now do the candidates after the farmers are chosen, your candidates after that, would they strictly be coming from urban settings or just anywhere and pretty much anywhere in Canada at all?
We'll be looking right across Canada. You know, I think it would be very interesting to have some urban singles for sure to see how they handle the farming lifestyle, but it's not a strict consideration.
Mm-hmm. So now I suspect I know some of the reason for this, you know, apart from the obvious. I mean, you're based there, but you know, why British Columbia specifically?
I could speak to that. I mean, I think one of the things, obviously, yes, of course, we're based here, but I think what we really love is that we can celebrate BC. You know, we can film against the backdrop of stunning BC landscapes from the Okanagan to the coastline to the Rocky Mountain Valleys. I really think all across Canada or parts of the world maybe don't know our landscape in the way that I think this show will be able to celebrate and show us. You know, ideally, the series will be able to, if we have the same success that the French Canadian series has had, we'll be able to travel a little bit more across the country. But we thought starting out west is a great way to show such a picturesque version of farming for love.
Mm-hmm. And you know, in the future, like assuming the English language franchise continues, you know, are you looking at sort of maybe expanding this, you know, to other parts of the country as well, or?
I think we're all hoping for a successful season one, and the goal would be to be able to ideally explore more communities and regions from across the country as mm-hmm. the show progresses.
Now, you know, from what I've seen of L'Amour est dans le Pré, it seems to be like a pretty common level-headed approach to, you know, to farming in the farm setting. You know, obviously, though, there's going to be some sort of inherent tension. You know, in many ways, that's sort of a key point of a show like this, I guess. You know, there's, you know, the implied premise that, you know, because a farmer is looking for a partner, you know, it's not geographically or demographically easy for farmers to find love. And, you know, that the work of farming itself isn't particularly romantic. You know, I mean, that's not just implied. That's undeniably true for many, you know, but on the other hand, you know, there is that sort of romanticized or nostalgic notion of farming. And obviously, you know, as we've discovered since the pandemic, you know, perhaps even more so now, there's, you know, a real and tangible desirability for certain aspects of rural living, you know, so there has to be some sort of tension, I'm assuming, between the two, you know, in order to make this work.
Yeah, you know, I think that the series really does, on the one hand, as you're saying, showcase the beauty of this rural lifestyle. You know, we're going to be able to go to, as Erin mentioned, so many stunning places across BC and really showcase what those landscapes and those communities have to offer. But of course, on the other hand, farming is really hard work. And so it will be very interesting to see how the daters stack up when it comes to the day-to-day farm chores that they're going to have to participate in.
Mm-hmm. You know, in, I mean, in my own case, I'm in journalism, you know, for a living, you know, so, you know, one would think I'd be, you know, all about, you know, sort of the straight up documentary realism, you know, yep, let's go straight to the manure pile. But, you know, I mean, you know, speaking for myself personally, though, I mean, I know anytime I've been to BC wine country, you know, my first impulse is to, you know, to take pictures of how freaking gorgeous it is. You know, I mean, how do you square that for a show like this? I mean, I know I'd find it tough to do. I mean, do you two personally, you know, sort of see yourselves, you know, teetering more toward one end of that whole spectrum or the other, sort of, you know, cinema verite, or, you know, sort of the just sort of faced with kind of this stunning geography that you've got in front of you?
I think that is, you know, when you look at some of the versions of the series internationally, it is sort of a combination of the beauty and the picturesque landscapes, but the sort of real, as Jean said, authentic, true relationship connection that, you know, I think really is what draws viewers to it. So you're sort of captivated by the views and the landscape, but it really is, as you said, the tension between, is this a choice, a life choice someone can make, and are these connections real? And I really do believe that the success of this show is based on its, you know, romance and, you know, heartwarming connections as much as anything else.
So, and Jean, what about from your angle? Is there a, you know, is there sort of one sort of way that you sort of find yourself teetering more than the other?
No, I mean, I think Erin summed it up well. You know, I think that the root of this show really is its authenticity, and it does provide a real immersive documentary look into farm life and the realities of day-to-day life on all different kinds of farms. And so we're certainly not going to shy away from showcasing that. But part of that truth is also the beauty of the lifestyle.
Well, I mean, in any case, you've both got a tough job ahead of you, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the result. You know, one last thing, though, you know, if this all goes according to plan, you know, when's the show expected to actually be on the air?
That's a date we'll have to get back to you on. I think so much of this depends on, you know, we're at the very beginning stages of casting, and, you know, once we cast, it really is about delivering a show that I know CTV, you know, has really high hopes for the series, and they'll have a plan for that to come in the year ahead.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything that that at this point, now that you've had a few applications coming in, that you'd like people to know if they're thinking about applying with about maybe a week or so to go by the time this podcast goes to air?
I would just really encourage people to get out there and to apply. As you mentioned, there's only about a couple weeks left for applications. And we are excited to meet farmers from across the province and get to know their stories. So I would just encourage people to get their applications in. And yeah, as I said, you know, the core thing is to be truly looking for an authentic love connection and be ready for that at this point in their life. That's really key.
Mm-hmm. And again,
Sorry, Dave, just to add to that, what I would also say is I think really what we want is we want to cast farmers and daters from all backgrounds to sort of represent the diversity of that our country has to offer. And so we really would encourage, you know, everyone and all versions of farmers to come to us and explore this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. That was the one interesting thing I found when I was looking at the opener for season 10 of La Moule dans le Pré. It was, you know, they have there was a 26-year-old woman, a 53-year-old man, actually from Eastern Ontario. There was two 20-something gentlemen and a 31-year-old, and one of those, I believe, was looking for a same-sex partner as well. So again, it seems to be a different mix sort of across the board.
Absolutely. And that's what excites us about it too.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing the final results. Certainly. Thank you. Thank you so much to both of you for your time today.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Erin Haskett and Jean Parsons are with Lark Productions and the executive producers of the CTV series Farming for Love, Now Seeking Farmers. If you're looking to apply, check out more.ctv.ca/ctv/farming-for-love-casting.html. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard.
There's a lot of discussion these days about carbon sequestration, that is, taking excess carbon out of the air we breathe and sticking it into the ground that we walk on. Now, for farmers and ranchers, of course, carbon is also the main driver of soil fertility, so knowing just how much is down there and what's really needed to improve that soil carbon profile, now that'd be valuable information to say the very least. Right now, you're going to hear Canadian Cattleman magazine editor Lisa Gunther talking to Kimberly Cornish, executive director of the Food Water Wellness Foundation in Alberta, about its soil carbon quantification project. Let's have a listen.
And just tell us about yourself, Kimberly.
I'm executive director of Food Water Wellness Foundation. We're a not-for-profit based in Alberta, working on soil carbon quantification and like the scaling of regenerative agricultural practices and environmentally sustainable and agricultural practices.
And so tell us a little bit about the pilot project you've been working on in Alberta.
We've been now since 2019 working on a pilot project on 15 farms and ranches across Alberta through different representing the climate variability and the temperature variability. And most of the farms are ranch or grassland type operations, but we've been looking at the carbon on those as a baseline at this point in relationship to neighboring cropland, and also looking at different practices of different management on the carbon levels. And so we've completed our first round of sampling and have developed a baseline map for been able to extrapolate the data to do a provincial scale baseline map at 30 meters resolution. And then we're just about ready to head back into the field for our second round of sampling.
And I know it's going to vary a lot between different ecoregions and with different, there's so many variables, but what are some of the highlights of what you've found so far?
One of the major findings is that 55% of the carbon in Alberta in the soil is actually that deeper than 30 centimeters, which is exciting because there's been a lot of speculation about is it worthwhile measuring and is it worthwhile looking at carbon sequestration at depth? And I think we're finding that, yes, there's a lot of carbon down there. There's carbon that could be potentially lost, and there's also potential to sequester more at depth, which would make it more stable in the future and more of a climate solution.
And you're also finding some interesting things regarding soil organic matter. There's kind of been an ongoing discussion for quite a while on how long it actually takes to build soil organic matter. So just tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, we've been working on farms that have shifted their organic matter in a matter of anywhere from 5 to 20 years, but it's gone up in percentage levels in percentages. And that was, you know, people kind of used to think always you've got what you've got and that's the end of the story. But as we're seeing like good grazing practices and good integration of perennial cover and just like diversity and extending the green growing roots, I think some of those practices are starting to show, especially when they're done well together, that there's more carbon actually being allocated below ground and stabilized within soil aggregates that make it, instead of being part of like the labile pool that just comes in and out every year, it actually slows it down into like a 10-year kind of cycle. But if that is every year on year, if there's still more carbon being going into the soil, then there's more that organic matter can really build.
And from what I understand, you're trying some different ways of actually measuring that carbon. So if you could just tell us a little bit about that as well.
So we're using a couple of technology innovation. So one is we're doing our sampling plans through a Latin hypercube sampling design. So it takes 60 layers of data and helps inform where we're going to take those samples so that we can extrapolate the data better and reduce the number of samples we need, because we have all this other layers of data that tell us more about what that soil sample means. We're not, most of the time, previously we would have just been relying on the soil samples to tell us the story. We've got all these other factors that we're using to tell the story along with the soil samples. So that's one thing. And then we are working with a contractor, Green Edge Precision, and they've developed this specialized sampling equipment for us that is, it can take samples to 1 meter depth in a variety of conditions, that's really well suited for rangeland, and it's very robust and can go through rocks, and it also enables us to take bulk density measurements in a really cost-effective way.
Great. Why are you doing this? Like, why do you think this is important?
I think it's important because the UN has talked about the 60 years of harvest left in terms of the amount of soil loss that we've had, and just through, you know, more modern agricultural techniques haven't always, there's been progress, but I think we still face like quite a bit of soil loss. And I think this is an opportunity to quantify what we have and what practices potentially could help build and kind of reverse those trends. I think there's some promise in how it could fit into a suite of agricultural or of climate solutions that also work well for agricultural processes. And I think it's, you know, what motivates me personally is just, you know, hearing about this for years and years, it's with producers talking about, like, we've had this outcome and we've had this outcome, and it's increased our water holding capabilities and our infiltration and all of those different pieces. To actually be able to validate that, I think is really significant. And I think it opens the door for, you know, the potential for an offset market or an ecological goods and services market that's really data-based and is specific to that piece of land that are generating some sort of credit. And I think that potentially opens the door for more scalability of really good management.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
You've been listening to Lisa Gunther of Canadian Cattlemen Magazine speaking with Kimberly Cornish of the Food Water Wellness Foundation. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. It just takes a quick glance at any Chicago wheat futures chart to see just where one of the biggest grain exporting nations in the world went to war against another major grain exporting nation, jeopardizing both countries' ability to supply grain. Now, with spring seeding not that far away here in Canada, Laura Rance, our VP content here at Glacier Farm Media, has some thoughts on what this implies for farmers on this side of the world.
Food security experts have issued a dire warning about the deteriorating state of global food security with Ukraine under siege. An alert issued in late March by the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization speaks to the rising uncertainty about the ability of Ukraine's farmers to continue to operate as this war with its unspeakable horrors continues. Already there is evidence of food shortages in many of the surveyed regions. Putin's war on Ukraine is unusual in that it affects two of the world's largest exporters of food and feed grain. The impacts will reach far beyond the borders of Ukraine and Russia. Just as the pandemic increased global food insecurity by pushing millions of people back below the poverty line, this conflict is severing food supply chains and driving up the cost of food exponentially. Nothing is more politically destabilizing than the sudden onset of hunger. Hunger in less developed countries readily leads to social unrest, bread riots, and revolutions. The Canadian Agricultural Policy Institute worries that the Ukrainian invasion could spark further secondary conflicts in the Middle East, North Africa, and elsewhere. It's becoming more apparent by the day that the world is staring at generation-defying supply shocks for which there is no easy remedy. The path to increased production elsewhere to make up for what's being lost is fraught with complications. It takes time to push land into production, whether it is still undeveloped or land that has been idled, usually because it's environmentally fragile or not very productive. Meanwhile, global carryover stocks of grain have been shrinking in recent years. What does exist may not be available to the market. China holds 50% of the carryover wheat and 70% of the corn. It's unlikely that this grain will be for sale at any price. This new era will affect all of us to varying degrees, ranging from those of us inconvenienced by higher food prices to those who will simply go without. As consumers, we need to remember that the food we throw out also wastes all of the resources that have gone into growing it, transporting it, processing it, and packaging it. Instead of putting it into the garbage, throw it into a soup pot or a casserole instead. Farmers, meanwhile, have some bigger choices to make, mainly about what not to do. The attention on global supply shortages is focused on cereals used for food and feed. Early estimates aren't pointing to a dramatic shift in seeding intentions, nor should they. Farmers' decisions around what to grow should be driven by rotational issues, the availability of production inputs, market signals, and what's best for their land. Of course, it is in their best interests, as well as the environment's, to continue refining their production decisions around efficiency and the sustainable use of resources. However, it would be a mistake to buy into the mythology that our farmers need to pull out all the stops, rip out every last tree row, and push fragile land into production to feed the world. That rhetoric places all the burden on productivity when, as the current situation exposes, it's much more complicated than that. Rather than looking for ways to grow our way out of this mess, the international community needs to stay focused on restoring peace. I'm Laura Rantz, Vice President of Content for Glacier Farm Media.
Well, that's been Between the Rows for this week. I'd like to thank our guests, Aaron Haskett, Gene Parsons, and Kimberly Cornish, as well as Lisa Gunther and Laura Rantz of Glacier Farm Media. We'll be back in a week with more from the GFM family of publications. I've been your host this week, Dave Bedard. Thanks for listening.
AGI Weststeel manufactures the highest quality galvanized grain bins on the market. With over a century of experience, our quality designs and storage options deliver the right solution to suit your needs. Visit aggrowth.com/Weststeel for more information. That's aggrowth.com/Weststeel.